This is Steve Smith from WCG Patient Radio. WCG is a company focused on the safety, efficiency, and success of clinical trials. We're speaking today with Dr. John Seltzer, founder of a part of WCG called ACI. And Dr. Seltzer is the president and founder of that organization, ACI Clinical. And he's the chief scientific officer here at WCG. He is an academic cardiologist originally and came out of training in the 90s when the issue of cardiac safety in clinical trials became prominent. And drug developers began to put together expert committees to oversee their clinical work. These expert committees eventually became a thing that Dr. Seltzer served on, and he's an expert on data monitoring committees, data safety boards, and so forth. And it's an honor to have you here today. Hello, John. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for asking me to be here.
Sure. You are, of course, a professional deeply involved in biomarker science and those collaborative discussions between sponsors, regulators, and other stakeholders to help determine whether biomarkers proposed by a sponsor are appropriate for the use as evidence in a clinical trial. When regulators agree on the validity of a biomarker, then clinical trials could potentially be concluded more quickly than if only clinical data is used. And patient communities, where I come from, have caught on to that notion that biomarkers are perhaps a way to get medicines approved when it seems difficult or impossible to come up with clinical data, like in the case of rare diseases. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about that concept and help us understand it from a more the professionals in the trenches point of view.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. From a regulator's point of view, we have to remember that their ultimate authority is the public. And so they, when they approve a drug, they have to make sure that patients actually do better. So historically, what they've used are what we call clinical endpoints. And so if a patient feels better, functions better, or lives longer, or as I say, you know, feel, function, and survival, those are the three key characteristics that historically we've used in clinical trials. Now, these have to be proven sort of beyond a shadow of a doubt, and we have statistics to let us know that it's sort of, you know, 95% true, which is great odds. So that's generally what we're talking about when you approve a drug. When we, so that's historical. Now, biomarkers are something new. Biomarkers are, we think of them, generally when we talk about them, we think of there's something you can measure in somebody's blood or a chemical, something in their blood that also predict, you know, how the disease is going. So what you want for biomarkers is something in the blood that either accurately predicts how the patient feels, functions, or indicates whether they will live longer.
And when the case of the rare diseases that I mentioned, one of the problems, of course, is small patient populations often manifest the disease differently. So extremely hard to find enough people to do anything with statistical power behind it. And then they may even manifest the benefit of the drug differently. They may all get better, but better in a different way. So I think a lot of both professionals and patients feel some diseases are never going to get an approved clinical trial unless we get surrogate endpoints validated. Is that right?
Yeah, true. Not just for rare diseases, but really for any disease where it would be prohibitive to do a trial. Okay, so let's just take a case where you're planning on, maybe you think you can prevent somebody's death, but it's many, many, many years off. Well, you can't run a trial for that long. So it'd be nice if you had a biomarker that actually predicted how the disease would go, okay? And you could use that to say, okay, if the biomarker, let's say it goes down, your chance of death goes down, and then you don't have to wait years and years and years to finish the trial. So if there is a biomarker that actually represents, in this case, mortality, that would be a great surrogate. Likewise, if you have a biomarker for how somebody feels or how well they function, it would be the same story where it just takes, you know, too long or it's too difficult to measure. So that's really the framework that we think about when would a biomarker be useful. So I know, for instance, your point is very good in diseases like DMD that are manifest very differently among the different children that have it. Wouldn't it be great if we had a singular marker that we can maybe measure from their blood and urine that actually told us how well they are doing? And that's what a regulator would look for. I'm sorry?
Yes, you're talking about a disease called DMD, which is short for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And that's a community that's had a lot of experience working with regulators and with the biotech companies seeking to create a treatment. And one of the things that they became high profile for is trying to document for the FDA and with the FDA's help the family's stance on risk versus benefit in order to say, because this is such a dangerous progressive disease, we'd like to be able to take some risk. So if there's something you can't prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, please give us some kind of preliminary approval. And then the FDA would say, well, we have to do some kind of scientific rigor. And so that's that something a lot of people in the communities, all communities, were watching to see how would that shake down. And I'm wondering about the role of how the professional committees then would play a role in that sort of discussion as in a clinical trial. There's something called biomarker adjudication, and the experts like you work with regulators and the sponsors to figure out how is a biomarker going to be viewed. Could you give us a little bit of thought on that?
Yeah. So when we adjudicate biomarkers, what we're doing is, I think you used the term validity earlier in the conversation, we make sure that that biomarker is valid. So the way we do that is generally we have to relate that back to some clinical endpoint, like we talked about before, which is, you know, how you feel, how you function, or survival. So, for instance, if we look at something like adult heart attacks, there's a biomarker, for instance, called troponin. And the way we validate that is people come into the hospital, we draw their blood, the doctor doesn't see the results, but the doctors decide whether or not they have heart attack basically on traditional criteria of you know, how the patient feels, or ECG, maybe other images. And then we compare that in many patients to the troponin level, which is a biomarker. And they have a very, very good correlation. And when we prove that, then you can use troponin, say, in a clinical trial instead of the other things that you need. And so that's a very, you know, well-validated biomarker. In oncology, they have many, you know, the disease is understood so well that they have many validated biomarkers in oncology for different types of tumors. One of the issues in many diseases, unfortunately, is we don't understand the biology all that well. So not only does a biomarker have to, so if we don't understand the biology, we're not sure necessarily that that biomarker, say, let's say, goes up when the disease gets worse. And if, let's say, you gave a person a medicine and the disease got better, the biomarker level would go down. And if you have diseases that are a whole number of different causes, that gets even more difficult. So when we go back to something like muscular dystrophy, which has an issue with the dystrophin protein, there are many reasons. There are many different pathways to the end result of people having muscular dystrophy. Some are just single mutations in a gene. Some are insertions in the genetic code for that cause protein miscoding, et cetera. So it's clinically manifest by, you know, most young men and having various muscular difficulties from, you know, starting at a certain age and living a certain, you know, it's fairly heterogeneous. And that's one of the difficulties in finding single biomarkers, is that we have to really understand the pathogenesis of the disease and precisely tie the chemicals we find in the blood ultimately to the disease and be able to show that it's relevant. In other words, when the disease gets worse, the biomarker gets worse and vice versa. And additionally, we can validate it, which means the measurement is consistent across time and across patient.
And is the validation also something that's based largely on, again, clinical data, where in order to really understand it, you need to see clinical data at first, and then later, perhaps that biomarker could be used with less and less clinical data?
Yes.
So I'm wondering if patient communities then could be advised that a role they can play in this is to make sure they're collecting natural history data and in other ways documenting their diseases, but with the advice of experts so that they're collecting it in a way that can be used. Would that be
accurate?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. The more precisely we're able to understand the clinical features of the disease, the better shot we have at rapidly identifying accurate biomarkers.
Yes, yes. That's why I liked when I watched the interaction between the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community and the regulators and the sponsors and so forth, and a lot of experts who were just giving their opinions, that there seemed to be that those several components. There was the component of why we need better natural history, and the patient community was working to help collect it. Why, from their perspective, we need the FDA to consider their risk versus benefit statements. That has to do with what you mentioned, that this affects boys and young boys, and it moves fast, and it causes irreversible damage. And then it also highlighted that the expert regulators have a lot of stake in whether we stay scientific and rigorous or not, and how to keep that rigor in there.
Yeah, yeah. My experience working with regulators is they are 100% behind using biomarkers. It's in the law, and they're encouraged through critical, you know, the FDA's critical path to adopt biomarkers. At the same time, the FDA is a science organization, and they're very willing to work with you to help, speed the development of biomarkers if possible, because they really would like to use them also. It makes everybody's job a lot easier. It's a little, biomarkers don't necessarily, I think there is a little confusion between using biomarkers and sort of conflating the argument about risk-benefit with biomarkers. So the risk-benefit argument is one, and that can be done with clinical endpoints. It's the same kind of argument as that, the risk-benefit, the issue with biomarkers is they may be a way to do clinical trials quicker. But the risk-benefit is still going to be based on demonstrable risk or demonstrable benefit, whether or not you're using clinical endpoints or biomarkers.
Yes, so that's important that it's demonstrable. What would you recommend to sponsors who are getting ready or doing an approach to the FDA with a biomarker they haven't approached them with and who may not be experienced in that kind of discussion?
The first thing I would recommend is to do some work before you propose it in a trial in figuring out, does this biomarker, and it doesn't have to be on large groups, but, does this biomarker actually represent what's going on with the disease? And does your compound, whatever your compound that you're developing, does it also influence that biomarker in the proper fashion? Okay, so there are biomarkers out there that we know, for instance, are associated with disease states, but they may not be affected by the compound you're testing, and that's very confusing. So, because it's not necessarily one biomarker per one disease or per one organ. So I think that the science from the sponsor to make sure that biomarker is meaningful is very, very important. And don't assume just because somebody else used it in a clinical trial, it works for your drug. So I think that's very, very important. And secondly, I think in the establishment, sort of proving that this biomarker is meaningful, to your earlier point, Steve, detailed natural histories are so important. And you know, in terms of not only in terms of especially in terms of sort of the early stage inclusion exclusion, and then following, you know, you may want to lower the number of endpoints that you follow, but make them much more precise. And that's always very helpful.
Yeah. So a biotech that's beginning to do this, or I think to follow on that advice, they should approach their patient communities and establish relationships very early in their process and start counseling them to help out with natural history data collection if it doesn't already exist.
Sure. The other thing that's important is that, you know, again, the FDA is science-based, which means they're quantitative. So this concept of feeling better, which you have to relate back to any biomarker, that needs to sort of be quantitated also. So if there are ways to, you know, categorize that in a way that's very, very clear for the agency, that's also helpful. And then, you know, at conferences with FDA officials and patient groups where I've seen an FDA official practically plead with the patient group to please provide them with a quantifiable outcome, and then they're happy to use it. But just a sort of emotional feeling or testimony of parents that somebody feels better isn't something that you can use as a regulator.
And has the FDA provided guidance for how to quantify that?
I think there are guidances in terms of scales and how they're you have to validate them and stuff. But I this G with the little guidance is a little G, not a big G. But
sure,
you know, it's been done in many other fields, and I think you know, there's a standard way of doing it. It's not really my area.
I know that the FDA has really become much more collaborative over the recent years on with both patient groups and pharmaceutical companies to try to arrive at these things that are a little bit newer to work out together how to quantify things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, they really do, in my opinion. You know, it's a joke that we're from the government, we're here to help, but I think that's really true with the vast majority of at least that, you know, medical review people I've dealt with at the FDA.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today, Dr. Seltzer. This has been very enlightening. It's a wonderful discussion, as always, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
We've been speaking today with Dr. John Seltzer, the president and founder of ACI Clinical, a part of WCG Clinical, about biomarkers and expert committees and related topics. This is WCG Patient Radio. Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.